Now all this sort of terminology, all this sort of symbolism of royalty, even of the military, the army, all this is not unconnected perhaps with the Buddha's original social background. The Buddha, as we learned yesterday, was born into the Kshatriya or the warrior caste. In ancient India there were four principal castes. According to the Hindu reckoning, they are first of all the Brahmins, the priests, then the Kshatriyas, the rulers and fighters, and then thirdly the Vaishyas, the merchants, traders and farmers, and lastly the Shudras, the labourers, the serfs. So the Buddha was born into the second of these, the Kshatriya caste. But it's rather interesting, it's rather significant that the Kshatriyas did not regard themselves as the second caste. They regarded themselves as the top caste, the first caste. And we find it rather interesting that in the Pali texts, this sort of attitude of the Kshatriyas is reflected, because in Pali, when they enumerate the four castes, they always put the Kshatriyas first. In Pali, you never find Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. You always find Kshatriya, Brahmana, Vaishya, Shudra. So this reflects the sort of attitude of the social group from which the Buddha himself originally sprang. We find also, and this is just a point of interest in passing, that the Buddha not only sprang from this sort of background, but he came from a rather patrician sort of family, and at the time of the Buddha's birth, his father was the elected king or president of the Shakya Republic. It's not always appreciated that in India, in the Buddha's day, there were two forms of government. There was monarchy, but there was also republican government. Towards the end of the Buddha's lifetime, the little republics of India were swallowed up by the developing Magadha Empire. But when the Buddha was born, these republics were for the most part in a very flourishing condition. And they elected their head. He sometimes had the title of Raja, but he was nevertheless elected. And in the case of the Shakya Republic, it seems he was elected for a period of 12 years. And the Buddha, it seems, was born while his father, Suddhodana, was serving a 12-year term of office. Now, born as he was into this sort of environment, the Buddha, as a young man, became highly proficient in all sorts of martial arts. We might tend to think of the Buddha as a young man as studying philosophy and studying maybe literature and all that sort of thing, but there's no evidence for that whatever. The Buddhist texts say nothing at all about the Buddha's studies as a young man, except that he learned how to fight. That he learned how to use the bow and arrow and the sword and the spear. He learned how to ride a horse and he learned how to drive a chariot. But there's nothing at all about studying. There were, of course, no books in those days. He must have picked up a bit of legendary lore. He might have learned a few mantras from some of the elders. Brahmanism hadn't penetrated into Sakya territory. We know that. He might have learned a bit about the history of the tribe, about the constitution of the republic and the way things were administered. But there's no sign that he received anything like what we would regard as a good education. As that he learned to fight and he learned various kinds of weaponry, and that was about all. And there is a very interesting legend that when he became betrothed to his cousin Yashodhara, some of Yashodhara's kinsmen objected that he wasn't good enough at fighting, so he had to demonstrate his prowess. And there are all sorts of legends about this, how he beat the kinsmen of his betrothed at all sorts of contests, whether it was archery, sword play, and so on. So therefore, with this sort of background, with this heroic background, it isn't surprising that the Buddha, even before his enlightenment, exhibited heroic qualities. We know that he left home when he was about 29. That must have been a great wrench. It isn't easy to break away in that fashion. If you've been brought up in comfort, even in luxury, in the bosom of one's family and one's tribe, and one has everything that one could wish for. The Buddha, as a young man, we're told, had three mansions, one for each of the three seasons. And they were full of singing girls and dancing girls, we're told. This is all the background from which the Buddha came. and not a university background or a background of bookish study. This is the sort of background from which he emerged. But he left it all. He left it all behind. He wrenched himself away, and it wasn't easy. And this certainly called for great and heroic qualities, to go out alone into the darkness, into the forest, going he knew not where, only knowing that he went in search of the truth. And then we find that for 6 years the Buddha practiced austerities. It's interesting to note, there's a very human touch indeed, that the scriptures relate, or the Buddha himself relates in the scriptures, that when, as a wandering monk, he begged his food for the first time, what happened? As you know, traditionally in East, the mendicant monk, including the Buddhist mendicant monk, begs from door to door. You take a big black begging bowl and you move from door to door. You stand there for a few minutes and people come and put a few scraps of food in it, then you move to the next door. When you feel you've collected enough for your meal, you go off to a quiet spot outside the village and you sit down and eat it. So the Buddha once related to his disciples, according to the scriptures, and this little story has all the ring of truth because it's not the sort of thing that anyone would invent later on. He related to his disciples how the first day that he lived in this way, the first time he sat down outside the village with this bowl full of scraps, he looked at it and he vomited because he hadn't been brought up in that way. He had been used to the best, and when as a monk, as a wanderer, for the first time he found himself face to face with that bowl of scraps, his stomach just turned. But he forced himself to it. He forced himself to live this sort of life, to subsist on this sort of diet. He no longer wore his rich princely garments. He just wore some rough yellow stained robes. We say robes, but they're probably more like rags. When we go around the modern Buddhist world, we tend to think that the Buddha lived rather like a modern Buddhist monk, but I don't think it was like that at all. In the East, Buddhist monks usually go around in beautifully laundered, very neat, very clean, very new yellow robes. And I'm afraid in some Buddhist countries it's considered rather disgraceful for a monk to go around in a rather old robe. I remember once I came down to Calcutta myself to a Buddhist monastery, and I happened to be wearing a very old robe. And some of my monk friends were quite scandalized and said, "Well, that's terrible, what will people think?" But it obviously wasn't like that in the Buddha's time. But the Buddha had to get used to this gradually. And it represented a complete change from his previous way of life.